Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Laura?
I'm good. We're back.
We're back. It's a new year. Everything's settling down for as much as ever, anyway. Let's say that.
Kind of. Yeah.
It's better.
I know. This week I felt like it was a little better. Last week it was like, okay, I sort of know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And then we had the snow at the end of the week, which kind of made things a little crazy for we Southerners. And then you had some mom stuff that you were dealing with all week, and so it was kind of a crazy week. This week has been a little bit better.
Yep, thankfully.
Yeah, I know. All right. First of all, I want to say thank you to the people that have sent emails in and comments on the website that say you've been listening to the podcast and missed the podcast, and that's so sweet because without your messages, we don't really know. We don't know that anybody's even really listening. So it's great that we got those because that certainly has fueled our fire for the new year, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And let's put a shout out to those folks who, near the end of last year, we seemed to be getting more calls, which was great. We love parents, therapists, whatever discipline they might be, anybody calling with anything related to speech and language development in young kids is right up our alley, and we love to have real-life people call. And it was getting better. There were a couple weeks there we'd have 2-3 callers, and then we kind of took a powder over the holidays, and I'm afraid we may have to play catch-up on the callers. But if you happen to be listening live,
we would love to have you call.
Yes, give us a call. And Laura, I don't know that I have my number right here. Do you?
I have it. I do. It's 1-718-766-4332. And again, Kate, and I would love to hear any question that you might have. If you're a little shy about talking on the phone and think it's going to be weird, it's really not. It's just like a normal phone conversation, or we think so, after doing this for a year and a half now almost. And I think the moms that call in, a lot of them are really nervous before, and especially if they've communicated with me by email or something. That's something they always say is, oh, I'm nervous. I don't know if I can do it. But afterwards, they all seem to think, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Right.
So, and if you're still a little reserved or a little cautious about wanting to do it, just send us an email, and we'll be glad to read your email and give you the answers that we would have given you. But it's always better if you can call, because then we can ask you questions and maybe give you a little bit different take on things or more specific advice if we're able to then, you know, tease out some of the things that we specifically wanted to ask you about. But what we're going to do today is take the comments and the emails that we've gotten in the last few weeks and update the listeners on specific children that we talked about and with moms that we talked about during those last couple of months of 2009, and give updates on the kids because some kids are making some progress out there and we're so excited about it.
Right. And Laura, I want to put another little tidbit in there, and that is sometimes moms do call and say, you know, I always say my son Johnny. I don't know why, but they give their child's name and, you know, give some kind of specific things. But if a mom's listening and she didn't feel comfortable doing that, you could very easily, we don't really care what you call your child. As long as we have a way to refer to him or her, you could change the gender for all we care. All we really are interested in is the specifics of what's going on with your child's language development and what you're concerned about. So if you feel like it would protect your child in the minute, you just call and say, my son, Louie, and you could have a daughter named Lisa. We don't really care. So, you know, we just talk about children in general, and we don't have to have the specifics. So just make
That's
the call,
right.
And you can change everything else.
That's exactly right. Okay, so I'm going to read some of these comments that we've gotten, and we'll chat about those. The first one is from Michelle, and if you'll remember her, I meant to look up the dates these people were on the show if they wanted to go back and listen to the original show, but I did not get that done. But remember Michelle, Kate, she was a mom from Texas, and she has a little girl who's 4. Her name is Katie, and she's pretty much nonverbal, and she was really concerned about her. And Michelle is so dedicated that she has gone back to work in a special education preschool classroom. And so Michelle was talking with us mostly about her daughter, Katie, and about some of the other children that are in the classroom. And she originally wrote us and said, you know, I like the podcast so much. I'm learning so much stuff. And then we asked her to be on the show, and she did, and she was a great caller. And then because she was on the show, to thank her, I wanted to send her my DVDs. And that's, if you haven't listened to the show before, I have a website. It's teachmetotalk.com, and I've done this series of DVDs for parents and professionals. And so you can really see the techniques that Kate and I talk about. And so I sent her those. And this is the email that I got on December 29th. And, again, it just made my year. It says, hi, it's Michelle, and you sent me your DVDs. And I just want to take a moment to kiss your feet. They are fantabulous. I stayed up till 1 a.m. watching Teach Me to Talk, and by 6 a.m., my 4-year-old little girl was up and ready to play. I pulled out her new Christmas toy, the Animal Hospital, based on the recommendations that you and Kate talked about in the podcast, and I got to work right away. And then in all caps, she says, Katie said 3 new words in just half an hour. And then she says, you got to remember, Katie is nonverbal, so this is huge. And she said, she said ball, yeah, and okay, in a perfectly intelligible way, so I just wanted to say thank you. So isn't that awesome that she was able to take the ideas that we talked about on the podcast week after week after week, and then watch the stuff in the DVDs, and then she was able to implement that with her own little girl and get results that perhaps even her therapist aren't getting in sessions. So that's awesome, and thank you, Michelle, for that email. I don't know if you're going to listen today or later or whenever, but that was just great news for us to hear.
And I don't remember the exact specifics, but I do recall on some level anyway that Michelle had talked about her child really didn't have a variety of vowel sounds and maybe 1 or 2 consonant sounds. And I think you and I both kind of said, let's back away from that specific sound stuff for this age,
right?
Because she was really largely not verbal. Let's target her. In her world, say a word.
Hey, you were really breaking up, Kate. I may have even lost you. Are you still there? Okay, I think we lost Kate. She'll call back in a minute. She's on her cell on the way home. Okay, what Kate is saying, I really do remember that, because when Michelle called in, she really talked about the oral motor work that they were doing with her and the specific exercises and the specific sounds that her therapist was recommending that mom work on. And we both said, you got to back up. And with kids who are nonverbal, you really need to be focused on getting lots and lots of words so that she can link words with meaning and not really work on those sounds. Kate, I just kind of picked up where you left off on that.
Well,
point.
Good, because I beep, 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 and I was off in the air, so I figured you did.
That's okay. Yeah, and what I said was what you and I say to each other all the time, you know, and when parents call in about this, or when we're sitting in meetings and the other therapists start in with, we're going to increase the consonants, blah, 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 and whatever else they say. You hear all that more than me, since you're usually listening to another speech therapist blab on and on. But, you know, what we really say is focus on words and focus on getting them to link words with things and activities, not so much on what specific sounds you're getting. So I think that made a real difference. And from what Michelle, she didn't say this in this email, but she said it in another one, is she really started focusing on playing and having fun rather than just getting her to say words. And I think that's the key with toddlers, is you really got to make it about communication and about interaction and making sure they, again, understand language and are having a good social experience, and then those words are going to come. You do not focus on sounds with toddlers.
I think it's the focus on people and learning, really, not just toddlers. So I'll go global with that. I think the classes that I learned best in, even as an adult, were those that the professors were really, really, really enthusiastic about that particular subject and just kept it as exciting and interesting and fun as it could possibly be. And then I just thought it was wonderful. Even a subject that wasn't inherently interesting to me became very interesting. I mean, who hasn't had a teacher or professor that kind of says, and then the war started, and then you just kind of glaze over. But if you have a professor up there saying, you know, and then the war started, you're interested and you're focused and you're really soaking it up. And there are some even pediatric speech language pathologists out there today.
And developmental interventionists.
And developmental interventionists.
And OTs. And PTs.
Yes, every discipline, we don't discriminate, who are really just, you know, essentially boring. They look bored themselves. And if you're not enthusiastic and you're not excited and happy to be playing with this wonderful toy and this wonderful child, then can you really reasonably expect a one-year-old or a two-year-old or a three-year-old to be, you know, fully engaged and really excited to be doing the same thing? No. I recently saw a therapist, and I don't know, frankly, what discipline she was, but was in a daycare, and she was off in a separate room, and I just peeked in the room and watched for a second, and she was sitting there, and I wanted to say, do you need a pillow? I mean, so bored. And this kid really was not paying a bit of attention to her. She was kind of off to the side playing, and she was doing the old narrating thing, you know. She was labeling things as the child picked it up and did something with it. And oh, boy. That is not the Laura Mize approach. And, you know, as easy as it would be to do it that way, it just isn't really very effective. So your message to Michelle, and that's the thing about seeing the DVDs, I think, is that easy to say it. And, you know, even though we give little goofy examples here on the podcast, when you actually see it, it becomes very obvious. Oh, you know, I think lots of parents who have purchased the DVDs thought they were doing it before, but then after they saw it, it was like, oh, you're really kind of making them do it in a fun way. Yep,
right.
They really kind of are. So,
well, and I think that's what we talk about all the time with therapists, and we'll say, gosh, she seems like she knows what she's doing. She seems like, you know, or a mom will say, well, she's really doing all that stuff, but it's somehow it's just not the same. And really, so many times it's not exactly, sometimes it is what you're doing, but so much of the time it's how you're doing it. And so the DVDs are good to kind of give you some, maybe a different frame of reference with how much fun you want to be, how animated you want to be, how persistent you want to be, and how intentional you want to be when you're getting children to learn to understand words and then eventually use words and use whatever they can communicatively. All right, the next update is from a mom named Sean, and if you'll remember her, Kate, she lives in Michigan, I want to say. And she had, her little boy's name is Anthony, and she was concerned about him, concerned about taking him to therapy. I think in that state they mostly do services in centers. And she said, had some original questions about how do you know if your therapy is working and what else can I do with him, and he just doesn't seem like he's very into therapy, and I'm just worried about his progress. So she got the DVDs, and she says the DVDs were amazing. I was also able to get my husband to watch, and I think that's another good point, too, is because sometimes dads aren't always home for therapy, and they can kind of see the mom do it, but when they see the third party do it, like if you're a mom listening right now and your husband's not really buying into this whole therapy thing, either have your therapist come when he's there, or beg him to be off or set up therapy on a day that, you know, you don't normally do it, so he would be there, because sometimes it is just a matter of seeing somebody else do it. that makes a real difference, like we were just saying. Anyway, she says, the DVDs are easy to follow, very informative, and to the point. After watching them, I was able to start right away and changing some of my approaches to help Anthony understand language better. Oh, and that's the big thing that we were talking about with her is she was saying he's not saying very much, and we backed her up and wanted to say, wait a minute, if he's not saying very much, let's ask you first, is he connecting with people? Is he social? And is he understanding language? And then we were saying, you know, if we were seeing Anthony, our focus would really be on helping him learn to understand more words, and then talking is going to come later than that. So she says, a quick update on Anthony. He is improving daily. He's up to about 25 words at 21 months. He has 6 different signs, and the rest I usually have to interpret. She says, we still have a lot of work to do, but the progress is amazing. So she wanted to let us know that with that more playful approach and with working on comprehension, that he started to gain words, and in her direct quote, his progress is amazing. So that was great. That's a good update on him. So we were glad we were able to kind of steer her in a different way than maybe she was understanding from her therapist that saw him. So that's super too. So 2 great success stories right there. All right, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. All right.
I was getting choked up about the third one, I think. Is this one?
This next one? I think so. Okay,
yeah.
This one says, hi, Laura. I contacted you over a year ago in October of 2008 with some questions about my little girl's expressive speech. I've been doing some research on your site lately for my son this time, and it occurred to me that I never gave you an update on my daughter. She qualified for early intervention the week before she turned 18 months. Thank you so much for your encouragement to pursue help. She's been getting speech therapy at least once a week since then, sometimes twice a week. She's now 31 months and is almost totally caught up with her age group. At her initial evaluation, we discovered that she has mild to moderate sensory integration disorder. And then she goes on to talk about hippotherapy and how good that's been. I think I'll just read through this whole thing. It's kind of long, but I'm going to read through it so everybody kind of reads the information that we had. We're blessed to have a hippotherapy program. And if you don't know what that is, hippotherapy is a therapist is with a child, and they have them ride a horse, and they position their bodies differently on it and do lots of different activities or movements so that they are working different muscle groups, increasing core strength, lots of therapy kind of things on that horse. But again, these are trained therapists who usually it's a physical therapist or an occupational therapist. Some speech pathologists do speech in that context as well, too. So, again, they're using the horse to provide different kinds of input to a little body than you could get maybe in more everyday ways. Is that a good way to explain that, Kate? Do you have something else you want to add about explaining hippotherapy?
That's about the sum total of my knowledge, to be honest.
Okay.
I will say the mom goes on and she emphasizes the core strength. I would maybe theorize that that hippotherapy helped even more with the sensory issues because, in my opinion, sensory kids oftentimes do very well with hippotherapy, and I don't necessarily understand the mechanics of that. I just know that for whatever reason, and my guess is it was more beneficial, or as far as her language development, it had more to do with the sensory piece coming in. You know, where
really
they
helping her regulate.
Yeah.
That's what I think too.
Mm-hmm.
And so mom goes on about hippotherapy, and she has a couple of paragraphs about that. But this is what we got choked up about. She says, I know we can't know what would have happened, but I do know that it would have taken me a lot longer to get Lainey evaluated without your website in response to my question. I also know that my relationship with her would have suffered tremendously without you. You were the first person I'd ever heard say that kids will talk if they can. If they won't talk, it's because they can't talk. Knowing that caused a 180-degree turn between us. Within 2 days of reading that article, Lainey went from being a standoffish, defensive, too independent, and untrusting little girl to a loving, cuddly, clingy, and sweet little girl. And really, it's no wonder. I had been treating her like she was the age of her speaking ability and like she was being stubborn and contrary. Why would she trust me? I was so amazed and had to hold back the tears the second night when I was rocking her with her bottle. For months, she hadn't let me hold the bottle for her or pacifier, and she would get mad if I even tried. But that night, she handed me her pacifier. She became a mama's girl right away and still is. It's lovely. So isn't that the sweetest thing?
I got weepy when I'm getting weepy again. Oh, my.
I know, but, you know, with that mom, and I had this same talk with a mom today of a new little guy that I'm seeing, because I think a lot of times people do, and we've said this a lot on this show too, they just assume that their children are not talking because they won't talk. Somehow they think that their kids have learned to hold out on them and be really stubborn and just not say a word, only because they think the mom really wants to hear it and get some kind of sick pleasure out of that. And we always say that is impossible. A 1, 2, or even a 3-year-old child does not have the mental capacity to be able to manipulate you and to have higher level thinking to think, she wants me to say it, so by God, I'm not going to say it. You know, that's not what's going on with kids. When kids can't talk, or when they don't talk, it's because they can't talk, not usually because they won't talk. If they won't talk, that's called selective mutism, and that is very, 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 very rare. And that's probably not what's going on with your child who is nonverbal. So I beg of you to kind of change the way you think about that. And even as a therapist, you know, how many times do we hear therapists, Kate, say, oh, he's just stubborn. He's just flat out stubborn. Mm-hmm. A mom told me that yesterday. She said that it's a little guy that, he was 2 in June, or he'll be 2 in June, so that would put him 18, 19 months, I guess. I'm so bad on math with months. I think about kids, oh, he's between 18 months and 2, and oh, he's between 2 and 2.5. But anyway, I digress. But she said he's still not walking. He's got low muscle tone, and he had heart surgery. But he is a smart little boy, really bright. He's got probably 15 signs that he's using now and trying to say some words, but a lot of them sound alike. And he's just really learned how to stand up, and he can take a few steps, but that's it. And I said, well, why does PT not think he's walking? And she said, he's stubborn. She just says he's stubborn, that he just doesn't want to do it. And I just, oh, my gosh, it's all I could do to say. That's not it. That is not it. When he can walk, he will walk, because it'll be a lot faster and a lot more efficient than crawling. And that is, and he's got to be a champion crawler. You know, don't get me wrong, that is probably a lot easier for him than walking, so he's still crawling. But that's the same thing with talking. When kids can talk, they do talk, because it's much easier than signing. It's much easier than crying and having your mom try to figure out what you want. So I love this email from this mom, because she said, when I changed my attitude about it, when I started looking at her as she can't talk rather than she won't talk, her relationship with me changed. And then they did all this other therapy stuff too, but she felt so much differently about her daughter, and obviously her daughter felt differently about her at that point too. So I think that's huge for parents of late-talking children, especially late-talking children who also happen to be little stinkers, you know, to think about. And that's like the little boy that I'm talking about, that I was talking about earlier today. He is a handful. The second he gets mad, the second you try to withhold something or make him sign or withhold something to say a word that he said in the past and you don't give it to him, boy, he goes right back into full-fledged throwing himself backwards on the floor and crying and fit throwing. And it does become easier, I think, for that mom to think about him like he's just being bad rather than he really can't do it. And for that little boy, I think, he's got a lot of comprehension problems too, which the mom didn't really understand. And so it was easier for her just to look at him like, you know, he's just being rotten here. He's not talking on purpose, rather than he can't talk yet. So I was glad that I got this email to kind of re-energize me with that whole little talk, so that I could remember to keep that in the forefront with parents, because it is easy to get so locked into the whole behavioral components and looking at the fits and looking at the tantrums rather than looking at what is the root of that. A lot of times, you know, is, I don't understand what you want me to do, and I can't say that darn word, not I won't say that word. So
right.
There you go.
Let's just clarify. For a new listener who doesn't know the way we go on about things, but I just want to say, are there times when kids are really, really verbal and mom's saying, say you're sorry, and the kid, you know,
totally different.
Sticks out his bottom lip and says no, or just puts his arms up and doesn't say sorry? Yes, totally different. We are talking about kids who really don't talk much at all, only occasionally pop out a word. You know, we are not talking about a very verbal two-year-old who can tell you what she ate for lunch and what she wants to watch on the TV. We are talking about kids who are really not saying very much. So I just don't want somebody to think. Laura and Kate don't think that kids don't ever choose not to talk, but we're talking about those beginning early talkers who really...
Or who might have said ball, you know, 2 weeks ago, and then you're sitting with them. You heard him say ball a couple times when you were playing with that 2 weeks ago, and you haven't heard that word since, and then you're going to take out the ball to play with them, and you say, you can't play with this ball unless you say ball right now. And I'm telling you what, mister, you better be saying it or you're not getting it. You got to say it because I know you can say it. You know, and you get on that whole rant and you get yourself as an adult all worked up about that. And then the kid gets negative because he sees that you're doing that. You know, not that he wasn't negative before. He probably was. And then it's just a big old cycle of that. And so, and that, the email from this mom, she really did realize, gosh, I was treating her. To me, it kind of sounds like that she was a little bit mad at her. Mm-hmm. You know, really thinking she is choosing not to talk. And when the mom realized, oh, my gosh, she's not talking because she can't talk, it totally changed her demeanor, and it changed how she interacted with her daughter, and then it changed that when she made that change, her daughter changed with her. And it's not as simple with that as every kid. You know, that little sweet little boy that I'm talking about that I've just seen for the second time today, oh my gosh, it may take, well, I was going to say it may take months for him to kind of warm up, but that's not true. Today he was putting his head on my lap and trying to tackle me, which his mom assures me is a sign of affection with him.
Might need to work on that sign of affection, yeah.
Oh, I know. I was glad I saw him running at me from across the room, or boy, he would have knocked me down. But it really does, that mindset, though, just changing it, even as a therapist, just changing your mind. It's not that he won't talk. It's that he can't talk. And that really does kind of, that makes you want to help him. That makes you want to think, you know, ooh, what else can I do? How else can I change my approach here? Not just I'm drawing a line in the sand and you better say it or else, because that approach hardly ever works. And we are pleasantly persistent when we want to get kids to talk, and we do withhold and we do sabotage and we do all those things, but we do that in a playful, fun way rather than hands on the hips, dictatorial, you better do it or else, buddy. So, again, I loved that email from that mom named Carol, and I was so glad she sent that to me because it is a good reminder that sometimes just changing how you think about it does really make a difference for kids.
Well, let me also interject, Laura. I feel certain that, and you hinted at this, but let's be clear on it for, again, our listeners. I'm sure not only did she change her mindset about this child being, you know, I think she thought she was difficult. She was choosing not to. She was kind of irritated with her on a fairly consistent basis. So she changed her attitude, but she also got the DVDs and she changed what she was doing with her too. So just like you said, for us with kids who, gee, this worked a week ago, why isn't it working today? I always try and remind myself, what can I do? What can I change? How can I present this differently? How can I, you know, what can I do to make this just a little bit easier so that, you know, he gets his best effort to get out a word or a sign or whatever it is. And I'm still certain that's exactly, the mom changed her attitude, but with that attitude change came, and I'm going to use these techniques that I saw Laura use on the DVD. And so then her daughter was able to, I'm sure it took some time, you know, and some work on both of their parts, but because she changed what she was doing, along with that huge shift in my kid's difficult, she realized my kid can't, and so I'm going to do whatever I can so that my kid can, and lo and behold, over time, she could. So,
well. And, yeah, and that's a good point, too. And like we were saying earlier, sometimes it's not exactly what you're doing, it's how you're doing it, although what mm-hmm. is very important, too.
Right.
And to that end, let's move on with somebody who's asking us kind of what to do. This person is a speech pathologist. She says, her name is Mandy, and she says, "Hi, Laura. I'm catching up on podcasts from before Christmas. I really enjoyed the show when y'all were talking with the CFYST, and for those moms and other therapists who are not familiar with that, a speech pathologist, the first 9 months that they are after they get their master's degrees, it's called their clinical fellowship year, CFY, and they have to work under direct supervision of another speech pathologist who kind of mentors them and who eventually signs off on their paperwork so that they can get what's called their Certificate of Clinical Competence. And most speech pathologists sign that as CCC-SLP with their writing their names on professional evaluations and things. And so she's saying she liked that. She says, "I listened to it yesterday morning and used suggestions that afternoon, which saved my therapy session. Thank you." Yeah, and I think, oh, boy, haven't we all had that where you think, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And you figure out something or you implement an idea you heard somebody talk about, and it totally changes the session. And so this is her question. She says, "I need advice with a preemie. He's almost 2.5 with expressive receptive delays. His parents were asking about his high arched palate and delayed speech. The first thing that popped into my head was feeding issues. They reported none." That's important for speech pathologists, just because the kid's history says he might have feeding issues because he's got a high palate. You might want to just ask the parents. They don't necessarily all follow that little line of what's supposed to be wrong. So anyway, they reported no feeding issues. He says he does speak a few words but rarely imitates letter sounds or words. He watches my mouth and imitates lip rounding, et cetera. And she says, "I have run out of ideas for therapy. I sing, play, make toys extra exciting. Lately, I can't get him to produce letter sounds / words. He will imitate environmental and animal sounds. And from other websites, forums, and from parents with preemies, they say hang in there and one day he will begin talking. Thanks so much for your show and your help, Mandy." Okay. First of all, let's talk about prematurity a little bit. You do adjust children's ages for prematurity until they are 24 months, and then you don't adjust after that at all. And I think lots of parents, well, I know we've had lots of parents, Kate, we've shared parents that even up until, I think they want to still adjust when their kids are 19, you know.
Yeah.
Ooh. He was 3 months premature, so he's still 18 months, and, you know, whatever, that's just a joke. But really, you do need to stop adjusting for prematurity by the time a child hits 2, because then, if there's still delays after that point, it's not because they are just because they're premature. It's because there are other things going on. And I think that that helps parents kind of put it in perspective with, gosh, I'm going to have to work to make this stuff better, or not, I'm just going to wait, and he's eventually going to catch up with no effort on my part. So I do like that that really is kind of well known in early intervention circles now, that we only adjust for prematurity until a child is 24 months, and after that we don't even think about that as an issue at all, and that it really is related to something else. It could be related to, most of the time it's, you know, a neurological glitch that's happened, and I don't even want to get into all that because, boy, I sure don't want to get emails about that. But so we're going to adjust for prematurity until 2. So she says this little guy's 2.5, so he's beyond the time when we think about prematurity as a reason that he has a language delay. She says that he has expressive and receptive delay, so he has trouble talking and he does not understand as well as other 2.5-year-old children. And it's then she goes on and, you know, talks about he does have a few words, but the thing that you and I both kind of zeroed right in on when we were talking about this is she says he rarely imitates letter sounds and words. And I would take it that she's trying to say, whatever his name is, "Joshua, tell me, pah, pah, pah." And Joshua does not do that. Well, guess what? There are lots of typically developing children who would not do that either, because that is, Kate, are you going to say the word? Boring. You know, you don't focus on that with kids, especially as your primary focus of therapy. He's a little guy that's not talking very much at all. And if she did something more fun, it probably would be easier for him to interact with her and want to repeat. And she even backs this up with her own information when she says he'll imitate environmental and animal sounds. And so when you have a kid that won't imitate speech sounds or vowels or consonants, you know, those specific little, tell me E, tell me ooh, you know, tell me mm, when he won't do that, but he will imitate those other things. I always think about those things aren't meaningful to him, but those fun play sounds like animal sounds and, you know, environmental sounds, I assume she's talking about a car or a truck or, you know, vroom, 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 beep, beep, you know, those kinds of sounds. I always think, okay, great, I've got him imitating, and those little sounds and those animal sounds are made up of the same darn vowels and consonants as words are. So we're going to go with that and quit trying to get him to imitate one sound at a time. You know, in our training as speech pathologists, we do think a lot about, can a kid do a sound in isolation or alone? But you really do kind of have to throw that out the window when you're talking about new talkers and early intervention, because it just makes no sense to those babies and toddlers why you're trying to get them to do that one sound at a time. It's not usually linked to an activity. And again, I save all of that articulation, all of that really focusing on individual sounds until they are talking and until intelligibility is a huge issue, meaning that mom and dad can't understand them a lot of the time, so we do need to start to clean up sounds at that point. And so I would just encourage her to follow her own advice and just keep it fun, 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 and focus on words and focus on those fun little sounds that he will imitate, not just those single letters or single sounds, single phonemes. I know you probably have something to say about that as well, Kate. Oh, is she there?
Laura.
Are you there? Yeah, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Were you gone for a minute in my whole tirade?
No, I was just calling from the house phone. I've been able to hear you for a long time on here. But,
okay.
Okay. Yeah, I would say it is kind of peculiar to me just that this child is doing those animal sounds, and that's where it seems to kind of stop as far as what he'll imitate, because I mean, I certainly do animal sounds, but I wouldn't say they're among the earliest things I do with a non-talker. And so I'd say, I'm guessing she makes those fun, he likes those, the parents reinforce them, you know, which is great that he's doing those, but just to say, I would guess she isn't doing a variety of other environmental sounds, she isn't doing, like, animated play sounds, she isn't... Or she's not making them as much fun because it's
that's what
though.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, because do you think that your kids you work with, I mean, we're generalizing here, obviously, but for me, I would say those are not the earliest things they'll imitate.
I think, okay, she says that he had imitated, that he spoke a few words, but rarely imitated sounds or words.
Okay.
And that she says, lately I can't get him to produce sounds or words, and I wonder if she wasn't just a little bit too focused on getting specific sounds. Because to me it sounds like words are kind of an afterthought, because she'll write letter sounds, words.
Sounds, words. Where,
yeah.
Like, if we were playing with bubbles, that's always an early one I do with all of them, because bees are pretty early sounds, and I'll do bubble, bubble, bubble. If I just did buh, 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 it would be kind of bizarre if the kid said buh, buh, you know, like, why would you? I mean,
okay, but you know what? A speech pathologist would not think that because of the way we're trained. And so we have to undo all that training and say, why would a kid say buh? You need to be saying the whole darn word. You need to be focused on bubble.
And I'll say this, there are certainly kids early on in therapy that I'm saying, bubble, and they said, buh, and I say, that's right, bubble.
Right, Yeah.
You know, they might give you that initial sound or, you know, bah, bah. Okay, great. Bubble. I would never, ever, but, you know, I'm not really a speech-language pathologist, so I kind of go with
You just play one on the internet talk show, yeah.
I just take it every day. But, you know, it just it's like, doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems peculiar to me. Like, for a baby,
right. You're
going to be saying, buh, buh, buh. You know, like, don't you want them to know it's a bubble? Don't you want them to
right. Say
bubble?
And that's where speech pathologists really shoot themselves in the foot, because they are thinking about sounds and phonology
mm-hmm.
and phonological development when they really should be thinking about language and thinking about words and thinking about, I want them to link meaning with what I've said with bubble rather than just going for that stupid buh, buh, buh. But I can can't you see, though, where, you know, and I know that your master's degree is not in speech pathology. Yours is in whatever that is. But we can.
Hey.
I'm just being silly today.
Interdisciplinary early childhood education. You
okay, whatever. I know. I'm just teasing. But, you know, we get so hyper-focused on those sounds that we miss the big picture. And with early intervention with toddlers, we really need to be focused on language and not on articulation. We need to be thinking about comprehension, expressive language. Who cares how he says it? At this point, with a new talker, with a kid who's nonverbal, we just need to celebrate the word. And to do that, you know, we need to kind of throw the whole phonologic analysis out the window and just think about language. And I think when therapists can kind of change their own minds about that, Dr. Rossetti is who I learned that from. And, well, I kind of knew that anyway, but he's the first professional person that I ever heard really say that. And he's a speech pathologist at University of Wisconsin, and he did the Rossetti Infant Language Toddler Scale. Did I say that wrong? Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale. There you go. And he said, when I heard him, when I was first going in private practice in the 90s, he said, don't think about how kids say it. Just think, concentrate on what they're saying and on the communicative intent and on getting them to interact and on if they even understand what they're talking about. You know, just forget all about all that articulation stuff. And that was a great message for me to get so early in my practice, is to focus on words and what things mean and that intent rather than exactly on how kids said it. Because I do think you could drive yourself, darn batty, thinking about, you know, how am I going to get this specific sound from this specific kid on this specific day? You know, really you got to be more big picture than that.
And I do, like you pointed out earlier, Laura, that I am on teams with other speech therapists, and you're always, if you're on a team, you are the speech therapist. So I, in practice, routinely hear other speech therapists saying, we're going to be working on specific speech sounds. And, you know, I do bite my tongue, believe it or not, I do, but it is so hard. I want to say, why? I mean, that's weird, you know. Aren't you working on words? Aren't you working on, and, well, that's just,
it's a hard way to think about it, because, listen, some people, I mean, you will get people who will really argue with you, Kate, that if a kid can't say a sound, he can't put it in a word. And I totally undid how I think about that and said, no, we've got to have it in a word first. It's got to mean something. It's got to be connected with an object or an event or with something for that to be meaningful. But there are lots of people who say, if he's not babbling, you're not going to get any talking. If you haven't heard a bee in isolation or in a variegated babble, you're not going to get that in a word. And I say that is absolutely not true. We hear sounds from kids in words every day because we're focused on the word rather than on getting the specific sound. And I would put that up against anybody any day of the week, because when it comes down to it, when you're on the floor playing with a kid, if you will make it fun and if you will make it meaningful and if you will put it in the context of play with what you're doing so that it makes sense that you're saying that word, you are much more likely to get it than you just sit right in front of them and babble. If you're talking about a late talker or a kid who's, you know, having developmental issues. Now, a typical kid may do that for you. Who knows? But we don't work with typical kids. You know,
right.
We work with kids who have language problems. So obviously there's a problem there. It's not going to follow the normal, typical development. Even people who go on and on about delays, delayed kids follow the same set of milestones. It's just behind. They're just a little behind. And I don't even know if I really buy that. So there you go.
See, I don't really. I mean, I think some late talkers may, but a lot don't.
A lot
they don't follow.
Mostly
yeah.
disordered. Yeah.
Right.
They're mostly disordered. So that's a.
You could wait 6 months and just do your normal thing and it'd be fixed, you know, but not always that easy.
Hardly ever happens.
Yeah. Yep. The other thing I would like to be able to get from that therapist is she doesn't mention signs at all.
Right.
I kind of wonder if that's something she's doing, because I think both of us are on the same page about signs give him a way to communicate, signs help
right.
his ability to imitate. I mean, there are lots of things that are kind of inherent in using early signs with late talkers that leads to words and
right.
helps with his, in the end, or ultimately helps the child use the words. And she doesn't say anything about, you know, he does five signs, he'll imitate whatever. And I
right.
would say, I'd like to be able to ask her or remind her, you or ask her, are you signing with him? Because I would definitely be signing with that little guy.
Absolutely. And even my little guy that, you know, today I was talking about earlier that I've just seen for the second time, he's got a handful of words, but does he ever say them at a predictable time? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just not consistent with that. So even words that he can say, I'm still signing those words, like go. He can say go, go, go. But he doesn't say it every time they play with the car or, you know, have something that, you know, when he swings, you know, he doesn't say it predictably at all. So I'm really using those signs to help him link. Okay, this is when I need to say that word. I need to be able to pop that out. So I think anytime you have a kid with just a handful of words, you're going to use signs regardless. I totally agree with that. And she didn't say anything about that. She may well be doing that and just left it out, but that's certainly something that I would do. And, you know, I love what we talked about before, and I think you've said this on the show with a kid, or maybe you've just said it to me in our conversations with a kid that that you're treating right now who really wasn't talking, and you told that mom, you know, we can't make him talk, but we can make him sign. And so it is something that you can help children do. You can't reach in and pull those words out, but, boy, you sure can take their little hands and have them do the sign while you're saying the word and while you're doing it. So, you know, regardless of why else we use signs, that's a pretty darn good reason, I think.
I do.
I can't make you say more, but I sure can't make you sign it, yeah.
Well, and I do think, aside from just being, you know, mommies who want their kids to obey us, but truthfully, kids do need to get on some level. You need to do something to get what you want. If you
right.
want that cookie, somehow you have to tell mommy cookie. Well, if the
right.
child cannot ever or only once every 3 months say cookie, that doesn't really help very much.
Right.
But if you're helping them to learn the message, you need to do something to get something, and we can't force the word cookie out of them, try as we may. We can help them sign cookie, and it does reinforce that general concept that you have to do something to get what you want. You can't just cry or fall
right.
on the floor or, you know, climb up and reach it yourself every time. Really, two-year-olds do need mommies or daddies or caregivers, and so it's not just that we like to control them or we like to
right.
make them do what we want them to, but that they learn that very, very important message that communication works, you know.
Right. And your life will go better if you
yes,
can do this.
Everybody's
yeah.
happier if your two-year-old can somehow tell you what they want. And so I do think it's, you know, important to get the message across to them that they have to somehow let you know. And we joke about not making them talk. Heaven knows we do really try, but sometimes even our best efforts aren't successful. But the
sure.
signing is something that you really can reinforce again, right, in a playful, supportive, loving sort of way.
Right. And like this little guy that I was talking about, he is a fit thrower, and he's got some sensory issues. So, of course, every time I touch him now, you know, it's the second time, and he's smart enough to know, oh, boy, here she comes reaching for me with those hands. She's going to make me do it. But when Mom helps him sign, he fusses a little bit, but not nearly as much if I do it. So it was great today. Mom sat right behind him, and she was the one who really had him do those signs. And then we, you know, woo, yay, you did it, you did it, you know, and gave him whatever it was he was signing. So that's, you know, certainly, it's not magic is my point. You know, we do still have kids who balk at it. And, again, this little guy has, you know, lots of kind of behavioral issues and comprehension issues and sensory issues, and so all rolled up into one. Boy, that's kind of a challenge, you know, to work with him. And just because I signed it one time today didn't mean that he was doing that sign with me. You know, heck no, and I'll give you an update on him. You know, as we keep going, it's not magic, but we are able to help him do it, whereas before if we were just relying on sounds, we may not be able to get that, get anything or get those sounds. So that's the reason to use it.
And it does sound like he's a kid because you said he has some words, but he doesn't use them routinely. He doesn't
right.
use them functionally. He, you know, and
right.
I see those kids routinely where, you know, they might see a ball across the room, and as they go towards it, say ball. They're not telling anybody ball. They're just kind of randomly labeling something, and yet I can have a ball toy and keep the balls, you know, behind my back and be playful about it and say, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? And what I get is a fit or,
right,
you know, they hit me with the hammer for the ball
right.
toy, but they don't know, they really don't even understand.
They don't understand.
If I say ball, I'll get the ball.
Right.
No.
Right. They haven't, so, and the mom said to me today, why isn't he doing the sign? I have been doing this with him nonstop since I saw you last. And my reply to her was, he doesn't get it yet. But this week, he knew how to clean up the toys today and that we had to zip and unzip the bag. He knew that the potato head pieces actually went in the hole in the potato head, you know, the various little parts. He didn't know that before I saw him last time, and he knew that today. You know, so he's learning, and eventually he is going to learn that those signs really are linked to that word, and then he'll get it. But, you know, it's going to take some time. And we're going to have to just keep being really consistent and keep, one, not giving him credit for where he doesn't understand it, you know, really kind of looking at his real deficits and doing it so many times that he finally has that aha moment where he gets it, where he gets, oh, when I put my fingers together and she's saying more, that means I actually get another thing of that or another cracker or more turns of those bubbles or whatever. He just hasn't made that conscious, well, I guess it's not even really conscious. He hasn't made that link yet where he understands that. And that's the, you know, that's the key for everything.
And
all right.
For a fair number of the kids we see, that is a big hurdle.
It's a big part of it, yeah. And then once they get it, they kind of, they snowball after that. You get lots of signs in a row, and then lo and behold, they start saying the darn words that go with the signs because they finally made that connection. But to get them there, you're going to have to be really playful and fun so they want to keep doing it with you, and you're going to have to be real consistent too. All right, here's an email from our friend Laurie, the CFY in New York City that was on that asked us some questions about really hard kids she had on her caseload. Remember her, Kate?
Oh, she got the baptism by fire.
Yeah.
A new graduate at a public school in New York City with very, very special needs, globally delayed kids. Woo!
Yeah. So she says, she wrote some really nice stuff about the DVDs, how much she likes them, blah, 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 blah. And then she says, I'm in a family over vacation that I had some questions about. They have a 20-month-old baby who recently underwent surgery, I believe due to problems with his adenoids. He at one point had tubes in his ears because he had ear infections. He does not speak yet, and the parents are concerned. I played with him briefly, and he was sort of engaged, but I couldn't get an accurate idea because we were in a pool and we just met, which could have affected the situation. No kidding. I don't want to compete with water, do you, Kate?
Nope.
Okay, he says, then she says, I know he's receiving speech therapy through early intervention. She says she has some limited experience with the eye, but she's begun to learn some things from watching the DVDs. And she says, if I did therapy with this child, would I use the same tactics that you were using in your videos? I know that this may seem like a vague and general question, but through play and modeling and exposing him to simplified language, one would hope that he would eventually pick up on it, right? I just love her for her honesty and for how she's just putting that question out there, and I just want to say a big old unqualified yes. Do what's in the DVD. Do what you read about on the website, and that's what works. There's no real magic beyond doing it, and how you do it, and playing, and being fun, and blah, 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 blah. But you can read books all day long about theory and still may not get as many results as just being really playful, being really persistent, teaching a kid signs, doing lots of modeling with a sing-song voice. You know, those are all giving lots of choices, withholding so that they have an opportunity to ask for the things they need, and then once they are saying some words, expanding on that to get phrases. Those are the nuts and bolts of early intervention language therapy. And yes, Laura, you do those things, and they do eventually learn to talk. So, there. Oh, okay.
That's a funny one. Yeah, I would say the only thing different about, I mean, you kind of look at where they are developmentally, so she would need to know kind of where that child's functioning. And then
right.
The thing I try and remind myself when the child is younger, and I, you know, unofficially, unprofessionally make a big distinction kind of in my mind, is he under two or over two? But
right.
You know,
yeah.
There are certainly kids we see who are 2.5 who really aren't functioning even at a 2-year-old level. But
right. They may be back at that 12 to 15 month level.
Right.
They're still really liking the balls and liking the bubbles and thinking it's a blast when the little peeks the clown, easy pop-up little clown, you push one button and he pops up. They still think that's great. There's no way they're ready for all that advanced pretend play with the Fisher-Price house and the babies and the loving families and the dinosaurs, you know, they don't get
or
all that.
Puzzles or books,
yeah,
or
yeah.
No, it needs to be. What I was trying to get out was,
sorry.
No, you didn't mess me up. I did it all by myself. I was trying to say, one, really, really be conscious of where that child is really developing developmentally, kind of across the board in communication and cognitive skills, social skills. Two, is the social piece intact? And she said she didn't really know because she'd met the kid at the pool. And it was, you know, she just met him, and there was water, and blah, blah, blah. So that'll be something she'll need to kind of determine over time once she feels like she does have a nice little relationship with the child. And three, I try and remind myself, bring it down, be more repetitive
right.
For younger. Because sometimes I know I'm guilty of essentially kind of getting bored myself.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I don't want to blow any more bubbles. I cannot
right.
do this again. But the younger they are, both chronologically and developmentally, the more likely they're really going to enjoy that repetition over. I mean, don't you feel that way sometimes?
Yes. And,
you know,
some, and you'll see it. I thought, and I'm going to use this little guy that today is the second day I saw him. He didn't sign bubble when we were doing bubbles. The next activity, when I open, and we did bubbles for a good 15 minutes because he just thought it was a riot. The next activity, when we opened the, I forgot what it was, he signed bubble then. And I think, oh my gosh, you just got it. It took you that long to get it. And I had totally moved on. And so I was already doing things a long time with him. But let me tell you, I'm taking fewer things next time so he has less to pull out of the bag or try to kind of dig through the bag. And I'm going to make sure, okay, Laura, it's only been 10 minutes. You need to give him 5 or 10 more minutes with this if he's still having a good time.
Because
it took him that long.
All
yeah.
after, all day, all morning, all afternoon, and here you are with the bubbles again. And you're thinking,
yeah.
I don't know if I could make bubbles fun for 20 minutes. But
right.
if that child you're playing with is still twinkly-eyed about the bubbles, then don't put them away and get the next cool thing, because it can, and the younger they are developmentally, the longer it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm constantly reminding myself, stay with it. If it's
yeah.
working, you know, you might want to change a little something you're doing.
A little something about it, yeah, but not the big activity. And, you know, and I could have, I was sitting on the floor to blow bubbles. I could have stood up and made that a little bit different. I could have had Mom blow the bubbles while I popped with him. I could have kicked the bubbles instead of, you know, we were just smacking them down with our hands on the floor and, you know, I was screaming, pop, pop, every time he did it. He thought that was hysterical. But, you know, again, like you said, tweak it a little bit, but stay with it. And I signed bubbles probably, oh, a good 100 times in that 15 minutes. And he got it 2 minutes after I put it up. So I should have just stuck with it a little more.
I'm constantly reminding myself he's either very young chronologically or very young developmentally. So
usually both.
Usually both. Yeah, I have a slew of younger kids right now, so I'm which is fun. It's fun. You know, in our world, it's 0 to 3. So an 18-month-old is different from our 2.5-year-old.
Exactly.
But I have to. That's something that is. I think I like. Well, let's say this. My personality lends itself to a little bit older child who can move along a little bit faster, and I have to really work on my own skills of staying with those babies, doing it, even if it's just the simplest little thing. But if they're still focused on it and they're still responding in a positive way, that means keep with it. You know, even if you can't do it one more time because you've got them and that's where you need them to be in order to make any kind of progress at all. So I have to give myself that lecture on a regular basis.
Me too. And, you know, it really did kind of reinforce that with me with this kid today. And the mom said it. The mom seemed noticed it. She said, look, he's signing bubbles.
He did bubbles.
And so she learned that lesson today for the first time. And I've learned it for the, you know, 51,000th time.
It is hard sometimes. Yeah. You know, you kind of feel like, okay, we've done the bubbles, bud, you know, but you really have to follow their lead on that. And if they're still twinkling and giggling and popping those bubbles, and then the answer is you need to keep doing it. So.
Right. And he faked me out because earlier he really was kind of at the beginning of the session, you know, this is the second one, so he knew all the toys were in Ziplocs in my bag, so he was really kind of wanting to move on, and so I was thinking, okay, keep it, you know, move along a little faster, come on, keep him with you, when I really should have, stayed with those bubbles 5 more minutes, so it is funny how you have to balance and how you have to adjust for each individual kid and keep learning those same darn lessons over and over, 15 years later, still learning
lessons. They remind you to go, oh, yeah, I knew that.
I knew that. If I were supervising me today, yeah.
Yeah, I struggle with that because I tend to think, oh, we're moving on because I myself get bored. And then I'm ready to move on. And
I was thinking, okay, he's with me.
Right.
We've done this for a long time. Let's just see if I can keep him with me while we do the next thing. Rather than, boy, he still likes those bubbles. If I hold out just a little bit more, I really might get that word or sign. So anyway, for what it's worth. Okay, we did not get to the one email that I really wanted to do today. Surprise, surprise. So we'll start with that one next week. You were right, Kate, when you said we should have done that one first, but I wanted to zip through those others. But anyway, once again, learning those same hard lessons over and over.
Find any late listeners, if you're listening and you're thinking, well, they didn't really get to my question, email it to Laura or call us next week. We're always Thursday at 2 o'clock. Are we Eastern time?
We're Eastern time. Thursdays at 2 Eastern time. Or you can email it to Laura at teachmetotalk.com. And that's the name of my website. If you just happen to stumble upon us on Blog Talk Radio and didn't come directly from the website, tons of articles on there for parents and for professionals. And again, we love hearing from mommies who have late talking children and toddlers who are developmentally delayed for whatever reason. And we love hearing from therapists too. Do the same thing that we do and work with young children. So call us, email us. We'll be happy to answer your question. And I think that's what we're going to do for the next several weeks is take questions and really talk about those and give mommies and therapists some different ideas.
Right. And we'll even take, professional advice from any therapist if you think, oh, they need to try this or they've never mentioned that or, you know, so it's not all we can tell you. We are open to suggestions.
Absolutely. We are open to suggestions.
We know that. We are not too proud. We believe you can learn new tricks.
Every day.
Every day, if possible. So anyway, just teasing. But that's it, I guess.
All right.
Okay.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.